Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Rebel Room. Ryan Green and Rob Misch, your LasVegasSun.com UNLV team here, and the UNLV athletic season is officially upon us. UNLV football gets kicked off on Saturday night, 7 p.m. at Sam Boyd Stadium.
About time we got real games, huh?
The fall camp this year is about a week longer than it was last year, and boy, you can really feel it. UNLV again, Sacramento State, Sam Boyd Stadium, 7 p.m. Saturday night. Rob Misch has become a Sacramento State aficionado of sorts here this week. And we're going to talk UNLV Sac State. We're going to also talk some UNLV hoops. You're loving the bees, huh?
Was that a hornet?
I was going to talk some UNLV hoops. There's always off-season news, and this week, the recent weeks, no different than any other time with UNLV hoops. So we've got some stuff to get into there.
Yep.
Also, you know, some tidbits for you on the AD search, which of course is going to go for a while. But
little hoops recruiting nuggets.
Yeah, some things to talk. We'll talk that a little bit later, but we're going to start with UNLV football again. Sacramento State, Saturday night. You know, you look at this and you say it's a Division 1A against a 1AA or FBS, FCS, whatever they call it now. This team's a little bit of an unknown to a lot of UNLV fans, not only because their name is the name brand, but Coach Sanford talked about it on Monday, too, about how this is a team with a little bit of an identity. Their identity isn't really known right now.
You know, they've had quite a turnover from last year. You know, in one breath, it looks like they have a lot more talent, a lot more speed, a lot more athleticism, a lot more depth. On the other hand, you're looking at a team that they pushed Colorado State last year. That's the one game that has really gotten a lot of attention. They actually had a 20-17 lead over Colorado State at Colorado State with 10 minutes left. They played really tight defense down the end, allowed a field goal with a minute and a half to go. Tie game. Then they had a real bad fumble deep in their own territory. They held them again, but then a last-second field goal won the game for Colorado State. This is the same Colorado State team that beat UNLV 41-28 on that same field. But like we said,
and went on to win a bowl game.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Hornets have a little bit of a different look, though. They have a junior quarterback, Jason Smith. It's his third year starting. So he really knows, he's really comfortable with the offense. He's comfortable with what he's doing and their strategies and their schemes. The problem is, he is without two of his premier wide receivers who graduated. The big one was Tony Washington, all Big Sky. He caught 7 passes for 117 yards against Colorado State last year. He's gone. Kyle Hill is gone. And then to even make those matters worse, Chase Detter was a sophomore who they were really ballyhooing as the next coming, the next big thing on the wide receiver scene. Broke a collarbone in camp, so he's out for a month. So, you know what? They have a lot of optimism, but they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
They have an offensive line who everybody returns except one person, one player. So it seems like that offensive line for Sac State and UNLV's defensive line, there could be some intriguing work done there. That could be the balance of the game. And as we talked about in the preseason, you know, UNLV really needed to shore up its attack on the quarterback, its rush. What have you seen in camp to maybe show that things are going to be different this year? I know they had a couple position changes. How are they looking?
Well, the D-line, obviously, you know, a lot of the focus last year with UNLV, the defensive struggles late in the season, a lot of people looked at the secondary because of injuries and a lot of guys not ready to be playing who were kind of forced into action, like a Chris Jones or Travis Dixon, both of whom went from quarterback to safety in the fall camp last year. And, you know, when teams move quarterbacks that aren't going to play to defensive back, you know there's something there. You know there's a little bit of a leak in the dam that they're trying to plug with a piece of gum.
Yeah, right.
And that turned out to be the case. And I'll tell you that, you know, not that that secondary was very strong last year, but it was exposed even further because they were left out to dry a lot because UNLV's pass rush was awful.
Right.
You know, did a story for Thursday looking at Ronnie Paulo, the Rebels junior middle linebacker, who's going to be very key in that pass rush. You know, he played hurt last year and was still second on the team in tackles, but now they wanted to be more of an attacker, a blitzer up the middle, a guy who's going to wreak havoc. You know, UNLV ranked 116th out of 119 FBS teams in tackles for loss last year, and they ranked 115th in sacks. So obviously that's the area. I mean, the pass coverage, and pass rush work hand in hand. If you have good pass rush, quarterbacks get forced into mistakes.
Right.
And then if you have a good pass defense, you know, your pass rush doesn't need to be as consistent. But
coverage sacks are good.
Yes, and it all starts up front. And what UNLV's done is Jason Beauchamp, senior outside linebacker who led the Mountain West in tackles last year, has moved down. He's going to play the majority of snaps at defensive end. On the other side will be junior Malo Talmua, who at 6'2", 270, maybe a little better fit for defensive end with his speed as opposed to his size that they were trying to tackle last year. And then in the middle, you got juniors Martin Tevis, or senior Martin Teviseu, and a junior in Isaaco Atui. You're talking about 650 pounds worth of defensive tackle in there. That's going to be tough for a lot of people to handle.
And, I owe you a beer. Those are great pronunciations. They'll test you.
You get used to it after a year. But, you know, I think they have the personnel lined up correctly right now. They have the guys in the right places to make this work. But, again, you're not going to know anything about whether it worked until the first game comes. Because last year, you know, Malo Talmua had an incredible fall camp and had a disappointing season.
Yeah.
It has to translate on Saturday. But right now they have the chips. They have the pieces in place, I guess you could say. And, you know, most teams hope to have that, and not all teams do at this point in the year. And UNLV is fortunate enough to have that.
So, in a quick nutshell, tell people what you saw in Paulo in the camp, and also maybe what he's like off the field a little bit.
Well, you know, Paulo's a big he has a chance to be the enforcer on this defense, and that's what they want. They want, you know, he's a kid who loves to hit. He loves to hit, and he loves to hit hard. And he said, you know, I want to be known as the most vicious guy out there. And this is a guy, you know, he talked going back to his high school days at Western when he played against Gorman, laying hits on DeMarco Murray, and who's now at Oklahoma. And he talked about, you know, hits that he laid back in sixth grade that he remembers. You know, but last year, second game of the year, sprains his ankle against Utah. That nags him all year. Then in the 10th game, strains the MCL in his right knee against New Mexico. Still keeps playing.
Wow.
Had 21 tackles in the last two games despite the ankle and knee. And again, 90 tackles, second on the team, but he couldn't attack like he could last year. And, you know, in fall camp, you've seen a lot of him blitzing. They send him through the middle a lot, and he's been disrupting things in the backfield. And they're going to really need him to do that. And I'll tell you, with 650 pounds of tackle in front of you, it frees you up to make a lot of plays.
Wow.
Just ask, you know, a guy like Brian Urlacher, who succeeded early in his NFL career, maybe a little undersized still at linebacker before he got bigger, because he had the D tackles in front of him. The examples are out there. So Ronnie Paulo has a chance to have a big year for the Rebels.
What about on the other side? Omar Clayton, is he over his injury spell, and has it affected him? And what have you seen on him?
He's looking good. And, you know, I'll tell you, I've only been covering this team for a little over a year now, but, you know, it doesn't take much research to see how rough the quarterback situation has been as far as instability in the Mike Sanford era. And this is the first time, it looks like, that he's entered a season with a quarterback that you don't have to worry about. You know, he knows what he's going to get out of this kid. He's a tough, smart quarterback who runs this offense well. He's been with Todd Berry for a while. He knows what he's doing. And, you know, I think it's taken a load off of this team knowing that they don't have to worry about the quarterback situation in fall camp.
What kind of savvy plays did you see in fall camp? Did even one play stick out or anything in particular stand out?
One that stands out was, you know, he had a nice throw in Ely. I believe it was an 11-on-11 drill where he, you know, rolled to his right under pressure, you know, didn't panic, and kind of flicked his wrist and just put a 35-yard pass on the button to Rodel and Anthony down the right sideline. You know, I was talking to Casey Flair, during the former Rebels receiver who's going to be playing for the UFL team here in Vegas this fall. And I was asking him what makes Omar so great as a quarterback to play with. And, you know, he said, the thing is, when he rolls out of the pocket, he's not looking at the ground. And when a guy's looking at the ground, when you know that he's thinking to run. But Omar's eyes are always looking downfield. He wants to keep a play alive with his arm as long as possible. And that really instills some confidence in your receivers to keep the play going.
Right.
And, you know, that's very valuable. And, you know, I don't think it's far-fetched right now to say that this is the second-best quarterback in the Mountain West based on what he's done in this league before behind a Max Hall.
Right.
I really don't think it's far-fetched at all.
You know, at the scrimmage we saw at Sam Boyd, arguably the prettiest catch was made by Kyle Martin.
Kyle Watkins,
yeah, I'm sorry, on the right side, a nice lob for a touchdown, Kyle Watkins. He looked like he really has a good pair of hands. talk about the tight end position a little bit more, and that really hasn't been a feature in the offense, but could it be more highlighted?
I think it could, and you know, especially if this running game struggles. You know, they still don't know what they're going to get out of the running game. Channing Trotter's the guy right now. C.J. Cox still healing with the hamstring injury. It looks like that might be a thing that nags him all year. You know, Bradley Randall, they're bringing him along kind of slow. He's going to play, but they're bringing him along slow. You know, the short passing game, it looks like it could be pretty key here this year, and I think Kyle Watkins could figure into that pretty big. You know, they've got a guy in Austin Harrington behind him, Jordan Barrett behind him. I think they want to, for the first time really since Samford's been here, make the tight end a position that's not just there kind of as a blocking dummy in the offense.
It's neat how Watkins so quickly has served as a mentor to Jordan Barrett.
Yeah, Barrett, of course, got here late.
Yep.
And he was expecting a gray shirt this year. And when the Marcus Sullivan situation fell through with his academics, they brought him in, recruited as a linebacker. They moved him to tight end right away. He's taken to it, though. He yep. likes it so far. And, yeah, Kyle Watkins is the most experienced guy in that group. But, you know, his hands, I think, could really come into play. I wouldn't be surprised to see them utilize it.
Yep.
And, you know, you're going to see them test a lot of things out like that against Sacramento State. You know, if you have an opponent to test things out against, to play 3, 4, 5 running backs against, this would be it, I would think. And I would imagine you'd agree, because this is an opponent that, you know, I know the Appalachian States of the world in the past couple of years. Regardless, this is an opponent that UNLV should be beating probably by 3 touchdowns.
Well, on one hand, it was a very savvy scheduling move by Mike Sanford. I know Ron Kantowski wrote a story about how they were originally going to open up against Minnesota. Is that right?
In their new stadium.
So, but that's a double-edged sword, because look what Appalachian State did in the big house against Michigan.
Yep.
So you better be on your toes, and you better have your stuff straight.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you can see how this team they've got some big games coming up after this. Oregon State comes to town next week. That's a nationally ranked team. Hawaii the week after, you know, no matter what Hawaii looks like, that's always going to be a tough opponent, and there's going to be a lot of Hawaii fans here. Then you got Wyoming and Reno on the road back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
I think UNLV, with a season where 6 wins are expected on a 12-game schedule, you cannot afford to piss one away like this.
Yep.
You just can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I get looking at Sac State, you know, do you think this is a team that could come in here and be as competitive as it was with Colorado State last year?
I don't really think so. It doesn't look like they have the same makeup. It just looks like a team with Tony Washington that Sac State had last year. I mean, a guy like that is so confident. He played such a big role in the team, and was just such an important element of that near upset. What an epic upset that would have been. I mean, I don't know if it would have attracted national attention, but I mean, Sac State had him on the ropes, and by all accounts, should have locked that one away, you know. 1AA teams, maybe that's a sign of, you know, maybe that's what they lack, that killer instinct, you know, being in such a odd position on the road. I would say that arguably would have been the best victory in that program's history. But the team is just, it's just too different. It's Jason Smith and not much else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
takes more than one man to do it on the road against a Division I team.
Yeah, and you know, with but you know, it should be a good little test too, because they're only missing one starter from last year on the offensive line. Jason Smith seems like he's a smart guy, so it'll be a good test for that UNLV defensive front. Mm-hmm. You know, you can take him lightly, but they better not.
Mm-hmm. And you know, just by the sound of it, not only does UNLV need to win this game, but I think the defense really needs to put its foot down. Going up against a tough quarterback, you know, let's be honest, and an experienced offensive line, you know what UNLV's offense is going to do. They're going to score 4 or 5 touchdowns this weekend. That's just going to happen. But the defense needs to make it so that the offense doesn't have pressure on it in the second half.
Well,
that was the case far too many times last year.
Right. Regardless of who's a quarterback, whether it's a freshman in his first game or, say, Jason Smith is a 4-year starter, you know, forget that. I think it's really important that UNLV proves that it's a 1A team against a 1AA team, FBS or BCS or whatever they want to call the new alignments. I'm old school. It's 1A against 1AA.
Agreed.
And they really need to show that they are vastly improved on both sides. And, you know, regardless of what you and I might think about the outcome or the score or predictions, they need to wipe this team out. Mm-hmm. And they need to show that they are just superior in every way on both sides.
And that wouldn't hurt their confidence going into next week against Oregon State either. And after Saturday night's game and Sunday morning, you'll be able to check in here on LasVegasSun.com/Rebels for full coverage from the game, video, photos, stories, plus post-game podcast. That will all be here following the Sac State game on Saturday. Let's shift gears now. Some other off-season things going on, specifically with UNLV hoops. What's the hot scuttlebutt?
You know, it's a great time.
I've been dying to use that word.
It's a great time of the year when everything's positive. Everybody's slim, trim, lean, mean, and looking forward to a great year. Bryce Masamba, we did a big thing on him recently, and he is just really looking good. He came in, he came in the school at about, 275? Yeah. And
looking like a truck, which was the nickname.
Exactly. Yeah. He has shed 30 pounds. His body fat has been cut from 21 to 15%. He still has work to do. He's a sophomore. He'll be leaner and meaner in a year, but the great thing is that people are going to see a different Bryce Masamba. His knee isn't exactly 100%. He's got an Achilles tendon that's still nagging and bugging him. But he has surprised teammates in pickup ball in the last few weeks with explosive moves, a dunk here or there. And so I think fans should be energized and enthused that they're going to see a different truck this season.
Well, where do you see him fitting in that rotation up front? Because obviously, he and Darius Santee are the two guys that played last year. We know what happened. You know, Masamba was inconsistent, had his moments, but, never really seemed to fit in. Santee started off looking good and then just kind of just disappeared gradually as the season went on. He even had some DNPs down the stretch. And then,
well, they had stretches where they were, again, playing without a center.
And had Joe Darger out there.
Boy.
And now you factor in Matt Shaw coming back off the ACL. He's vowed to play like a big man.
We saw him play like a big man toward the end of practice last season. And and we saw him play with a scowl, and he was meaner. He was getting rebounds. That's a different Matt Shaw than we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
So I think people can be happy that he's going to stick his nose down there. And I think you're going to see Santee maybe play more of a four this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best thing for Bryce is the fact that Carlos Lopez is in from Finley Prep push him.
Yeah.
Because Bryce knows that if he's not too careful and doesn't show improvement and a hunger, Carlos is going to step right in there. And, he might even start. And Carlos has been looking very strong in practice the last few weeks. He's got some dervish spin moves down low. And he doesn't hesitate to the rim. We've documented that a lot with what we've done with Finley. And so I think those guys pushing each other is going to do nothing but help that team. Mm-hmm. So, along those same lines, I'm hearing very, very good reports about Derek Jasper.
Yeah, that seems to be the guy that nobody can stop raving about this summer. We documented him last year and the struggles he was going through to recover from the knee injury. And now, we saw him at the summer league. He looked trim. And he didn't even look like the same guy. And just from talking to people around the program that we know, just hearing what they've seen of him at pickup ball and things like that, it sounds like this. I think one of the most positive things we heard was, Chase Stanback has looked like that guy who's going to be your 18 to 20 point a game guy. But Derek Jasper's looked like the guy who could be the 10 to 15 points, 6 to 8 rebounds, 6 to 8 assists guy.
Yeah.
Almost in the mold of the guy he grew up idolizing, Jason Kidd. Just
absolutely.
A well-rounded point guard who can take the bull by the horns and
right.
run the team. And that's what that team needs.
Curtis Terry and Kevin Kruger have spent time playing pickup ball with him and against him. And Curtis Terry said that he is just – he's so amazed how Derek – he's either going to take it over you or through you.
Yeah.
Through you. So, he's extremely aggressive. He's going to dunk. He's going to take it to the hole. Kevin Kruger said he is most impressive with Derek's defensive ability. He's sliding. He's denying. He's keeping people from doing what they want to do. And Bryce Masamba said, boy, you better have your hands ready because he's going to find you. He loves how he is so unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like the entire package there. So I think when we get to finally see him do his stuff, it's going to be a treat. We're going to take a closer look at him at the end of this week so people can look forward to some pretty impressive stuff on Derek Jasper that we're going to do for early next week.
Yeah. And before ending the show today, let's talk just some you had a recent sit-down with one of the candidates for the UNLV athletic director position, Steve Stallworth. Yep. Give a little insight into that, what's going on there. We know it's going to be a while until an AD is named, whether that's the right or not. You know, that's the way it is right now.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a late stage in the process to get someone. You know, Mike Hamrick. Nobody is going to hesitate to take a job at your school. I mean. You know, so you can't fault him for not taking the job in June. Guess what? It opened up when it opened up. So it threw a curve in the hiring process because this isn't the time of year when business like that is done. That being said, they're taking their time. It'll probably take the whole entire academic year to formulate a committee to get a list together. Dr. Neil Smatrisk is going to do that, and there's going to be some prominent local people on that board. Lon Kruger is going to have his say. Cliff Finley will no doubt have his finger in that pie. Jim Rogers is no longer the chancellor of the Board of Regents. However, you don't ever want to be in his crosshairs. David Ashley knows that. Mike Hamrick knows that. Rogers was very critical about Hamrick not being out in the public. Rogers would be places. He'd be at parties. He'd be at functions. And he would never see Hamrick. That will not happen again. Stallworth is a guy, for what it's worth, who has lived in the community. He knows who's out there. It's not just about who's a donor to UNLV, who's a season ticket holder. There's other people out there with money, even in this tough economic environment, and he knows where they are. So he brings a savvy blend of sports knowledge and business acumen to the role. He's going to be no doubt on a short list. That's going to include Tina Kunzer-Murphy, the director of the Las Vegas Bowl, and Jerry Koloski, who's the current interim AD. So it'll be real interesting to see who gets input from where. A lot of posturing going on right now behind the scenes, a lot of promotional calls being made on behalf of people. I sat down with Steve in his backyard Sunday. We talked for 3 hours, and this guy, he's a former quarterback. He backed up Randall Cunningham. He bleeds Rebel Red. Not only that, he signs Rebel Red. Every contract, everything he signs, checks, memos, anything, he does it in red ink. He always has, and that's for a reason. He said, Rebel Red, that's my commitment, that's my passion. So
can't wait to read it.
Yeah, so, you know, this guy, in every time he signs his signature, he it's all about UNLV. So, you know, I think with the tough economy, I think it's going to come down to a local candidate, and I don't think that's a bad thing. It might be a fallback position. It might be a second-tier deal. Some might look at it that way, but I don't think so, because I think for too long this athletic department has had a head that really hasn't had that really hasn't bled Rebel Red. Mm. I think that passion is invaluable, and you should look for that every time you are looking for an AD. We don't even have to name the names of the series of ADs they've had who really were here to collect a paycheck.
Yeah,
that shows in your performance in your business and how you operate every day. And guess what? You get someone like that, and you lack a certain amount of respect from the people who work with you.
Yeah.
So if that's permeating inside, how's that looking in the outside? It's not looking good. So I think Neil Smatrisk is going to have a good little list of candidates, and I think they're going to get the right person. You know, Stallworth wants the job. It's the job of a lifetime, and it is the only job he would leave Michael Gaughan for. So Michael Gaughan told him, you know, you better be careful. The only reason you're not going to get the job is because you're the best person for it. Well, you know how bureaucracies work. But there's also a reason why
qualifications don't always tell the whole story.
Sure, and the flip side of that is Gaughan said, "Be careful what you wish for."
Yeah.
So that's life. But there's a reason Neil Smatrisk is in that position, because the Board of Regents and Rogers thought that highly of him. So I think he's going to make the right move.
Okay.
And we'll keep posted. We'll keep everybody up to date with how that's going to unravel.
Again, LasVegasSun.com/Rebels, the site you are probably on right now, unless you're hearing this in iTunes, which you can also do. So for all of that, before we get out of here, now that you've brought the Hornets zone back, let's get a prediction for Saturday.
Ooh, 41-9 UNLV.
Okay, so you're saying the defense looks staunch.
Both sides.
Okay. I'm going to stay in that ballpark. I'll say 38-17.
You're gonna let the Hornets in the end zone, huh?
Yes, because UNLV's defensive depth is still a little bit in question, I think.
Yeah, but you know, let's talk about that real
and
quick.
That's the thing. If this offense starts hot, you're gonna see the third team defenses in the second half, and that's where you get a junk TD or two.
Oh, that's understandable, sure. Yeah. But you know what? We forgot one important item. Let's talk about that secondary and a couple new JC guys who are in there and what you've seen in them. Those guys are hard hitters.
Yeah, and they, you know, you got two very physical corners in Mike Grant and Warren Ziegler, who are both listed as second teamers right now. The competition at cornerback and safety is going to keep going throughout the year, and nothing's going to be set in stone because they got so many guys who can play now. Last year they didn't have that luxury. Junior Quentin Pointer, who's healthy again, and sophomore Deontay Purvis are both going to be starting at cornerback, but Ziegler and Grant are going to play too. Purvis is an interesting story, a guy who's came in as a speed guy last year, never played defense before really. He played safety a little bit in high school. Last year didn't even know how to backpedal when they'd put him in there, and now he would basically turn and sprint because it's what he knew how to do. Now he knows the techniques a little better, so it's going to be interesting to see how he works. And then at safety, you know, Jones and Dixon, the converted quarterbacks, they're going to be playing a lot. Alex DiGiacomo, the junior college transfer, who I think was the best safety in fall camp, he's going to play some. And Markel Martin, a senior. There's a lot of different names and numbers you're going to have. You know, not having the names on the back of the jerseys might hurt UNLV fans that don't know this secondary too well, but there's going to be a lot of different names and numbers in there.
Okay, so here's the biggest prediction. What's the attendance going to be?
Boy, what's the capacity at Sam Boyd?
34-ish?
I'm going to say 18, 19 for the opener, somewhere around there. And if this team looks good, if they pull off a 3-4 touchdown win, I think you could very well expect to see 25,000 next week when Oregon State comes into town.
That's big.
Yep.
That's very important. So there's a lot on the line this week.
Yep, very much so. And again, full coverage of it, LasVegasSun.com/Rebels over the weekend, before, during, and after the game. For Rob Misch, I'm Ryan Green. See you later.